Oh, gosh. We're back to Dancing in the Studio. This is Kelly Richmond Pope and Bill Cressy, and we are talking true crime tonight. You just heard a clip talking about the admission scandal.
Yes, 50 parents and others indicted. Right now, we know one very famous one has pled guilty and has been sentenced. So many more.
So we have an interesting discussion that we are about to have tonight.
Yes.
Your school was involved in this. You're a graduate of Notre Dame, right?
Yes, I was. And no, it was not involved.
No. Oh. I think somebody was wanting to. Am I making this up?
Yes, I think so.
Trying
to make Notre Dame look bad. But no, we were. What I thought was funny in the indictment, they listed all of the various colleges involved, and you had Stanford and USC, University of Southern California, which warms the heart of a Notre Dame person knowing that they were listed in there. And University of Texas at Austin, which we'll talk about in the last hour, maybe. But they listed all these colleges, and they called them all a highly selective private university or public university, depending on the case. And the one they had in there was the University of San Diego, which they just call, it's a selective university. So they really got
my dissertation kind of chair, them. I think, is at University of San Diego.
Well, your dissertation chair highly selective.
Anyway. I'll tell you, we have a guest on the line tonight, and Kelly Williams Bowler is a name from the past. And
not my past.
News past. And she's been a guest in my graduate forensic accounting class at DePaul University, because when this admission scandal started surfacing, Kelly's case and story resurfaced. It was a 2011 case, and I came to know of Kelly's case because I watched the documentary that used to be on Netflix called The Honest Truth About Dishonesty. Did you ever see that with Dan Ariely, his research?
Yeah, I saw a bit of it, yes.
So her story was one of the stories that was profiled. And so, Kelly, are you here with us tonight?
Hi, yes, I am. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks. See, fella Kelly. You know she's good because her name is Kelly.
Okay, now how am I going to keep this straight? How about you're Kelly 1 and on the phone is Kelly 2?
And our voices sort of sound the same, so you won't know who you're talking to.
Oh, I think I can figure it out. I can see your lips move, and I'm right here.
So, Kelly, thanks for joining, and it's nice to talk to you again. It's been a minute since I've seen you. But
yeah, absolutely. But thank you for having me on.
Yeah, I'm sure you're wondering when your name is going to eventually be out of the news for good.
it crossed my mind, you know, when it all happened.
So why don't you tell
me with a grain of thought?
So tell us a little bit about your story and what happened to you, and why your name is still mentioned today.
Okay, well, I'll take you back. In 2009, I was indicted, but to take you back a little further, a couple years prior, I'll say almost about 2 years prior, to 2011, I had enrolled my daughter in my parents' school district, and they had been there for 2 years. The first year, everything was fine, but the second year, they had hired an investigator, private eye. And I guess he followed me around for 2 weeks. That's what I understand. And basically, you know, that's when they said that they have, and I quote, clear and convincing evidence that I did not live in district. So they wanted me to remove my daughter. So, of course, we were panicking and tried to get something called a grandparent power of attorney. Well, I did get it. Explained everything to the judge. And we would get that at our local juvie court. And so we did, and we had it, and we continued for the year. But I guess they, maybe around May or June, they had went to the court, and they asked them, you know, could they, like, deny it or whatever. So they did. In June, I received a letter from the judge, and she said, you know what, just remove the kids and go back to your district. So we did. I removed the girls. We went back to the district. 18 months later, I received an indictment and didn't know what it was because I had never been in trouble before. And it was Ohio. It was via postcard in the mail, and it was Ohio versus Kelly Williams Solar. And I didn't know what that was. So I called my father, and he was like, well, bring it over. So I did, and he looked at it, and lo and behold, he had one on the same day. So that's when the process began. So then we went to court. We found out that it was Copley, Fairline City Schools, and that that was the indictment. Okay, so that's when everything began. And, of course, that rolled over. That was into 2011. And I got, you know, charged in grand theft, tampering with documents. And I went to jail for 10 days, 3 years probation, you know, 40 hours of community service, 70 hours of community service, 20 hours of, they wanted me to do counseling to write a letter, also write a letter once it's all done to the judge. I can't remember everything, but it was a nice long laundry list of things that I had to, you know, do, and I did it. And my father, he also went to jail. We both went to jail, and it was all initiated because of the district situation. And then, of course, you know, I don't know how much you know, but he went to jail, and what happened with him was they initially charged him with the same thing, but then they couldn't. Because my father didn't enroll the girls, only I did. And he did live there. He found the land. He built that house. The house had been there for 20-plus years. So what happened was they couldn't get him on that, so they just started looking for different things. My father was ill, and he was taking he was using Social Security, and they said that he should have been using disability, and he did not know the difference between the two. He thought that he was doing the right thing, and at a certain age, you got to flip over and all this kind of stuff. So basically, they said that he stole $80,000 of medical. And so they sent him to the penitentiary, and he died. He never came home. So with all of that, you know, after that happened, and of course, you know, I was always an advocate for equality of education. I work in the system. I've been in the system, and I don't know. I'm just trying to make sure I have everything here because I'm trying to recall everything that happened, all the steps, because it was a lot, and it was 8 years ago.
So Kelly, let me ask you this. As you follow the news, and I'm sure people are sending you articles daily about the parallels between your case and what's happened to Felicity Huffman. And yes. She was sentenced to 14 days. Do you think that her sentence is comparable to what happened to you? Or do you think her treatment is different than what happened to you?
I mean, you know, being that they're who they are and that they're famous, they have been protected on many different levels. You know, as you know, I don't know if you know, but, you know, I was just a basic mom in the area, so I got a mugshot. It went all over the globe. A mugshot has yet to be received. No one has seen the mugshot. One of the other things is that she was able to go home and take care of her situation. Mind you, her daughter, if I'm correct, her daughter is grown. She was able to go home, take care of all her business prior to this day that she is supposed to report for her sentencing, or not sentencing, but for her actual serving the time. With me, as soon as she hit the, you know, the gavel or whatever it's called on the judge table, I went off to jail immediately, shackled me, and I went immediately to jail. So there are differences, and it is apples to oranges now, okay? But at the same time, it's like you just see the difference in certain things. You know, they're not, and they already said it in the case. They said they weren't going to release any mugshot because they thought it might damage their reputation.
Sure.
If I may, just show a couple of differences here. Now, as I understand it, Kelly 2, I'll call you, your mm-hmm. case was in state court in Ohio, correct? Not federal court.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely right.
Okay. Now, did you stand trial or did you plead guilty?
I stood trial.
Okay. So Felicity pled guilty. And, you know, generally, in court, and again, kind of speaking as my experience as an attorney, you plead guilty, you generally get a lighter sentence, more favorable treatment, and especially in this case where she was the first one out. That sort of trying to encourage the others. Now, were you also the only person that the school district went after, or were there others?
I don't know if there was others at that particular time. Well, there was one other, actually, there was. And, you know, I knew the lady, still know her, and she did not live in the district, but she was able to continue doing, you know, keeping her kid. Her kids ended up graduating from there. So I don't know exactly what happened, how that happened. It was quite a few others that lived in the district that their kids, you know, graduated. But, of course, you know, I would never have mentioned that or said anything.
Sure.
But it was was quite a few that were there that did not, that did what I did.
So, Kelly, we're going to take a quick break. Can you stay on the line with us so we can talk a little bit more about your story?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you so much. You're listening to Kelly Pope and Bill Cressy with True Crime Tonight. Join us back on WGN 720. We are back.
With the mellow tunes, yeah.
I don't think I like this.
You don't like that one?
I'm going to have to give you some dance lessons.
Yeah, well, it's definitely called for. Yeah.
So we are talking to Kelly Williams-Bolar about her 2011 case where she told a lie and wanted to enroll her children, her daughters, in a better school.
And did, in fact, enroll them, and they were there for a couple of years, right?
Yeah, and so this case is resurfaced because there's a lot of buzz and talk about the parallels between Kelly's treatment and indictment and sentencing to what's going on in the admission scandal. Last week, we saw that Felicity Huffman was sentenced to 14 days, and she will be reporting soon. We are still waiting to see what's going to happen to Lori Loughlin. So I'm curious to hear, since you are an attorney.
Yes.
I'm curious to hear what you think about that. But we're going to bring Kelly back into the conversation. Kelly, are you there?
I'm here.
Hello, Kelly, too.
Hi.
So, Kelly, I would imagine it has to be overwhelming to constantly see emails and texts from people saying, hey, did you see this article about you again? Why do you think the interest? Why do you think you're back in the news again?
You know, I don't know. I mean, you know, what happened was, you know, some months back when it first ignited, I got a call. I started getting a text around 2 o'clock in the morning, and people were saying, "You know, you're in the thread." And I'm like, "Okay." I mean, it does. You know, honestly, ever since it happened, it never has really. It has waved. How about that? It has waved. So it goes up, it goes down, it goes up, it goes down, and that's constant. Now that has been constant, but of course, with this situation, it was a whole different level because they, I don't know how it got in the thread, okay? But what I'm saying is that I really don't know. What I'm just thinking is that the only thing I can think of is just maybe because they're rich. I'm not sure. Maybe that's what they were trying to say, is that because they're, either their mom, they're actresses, but they did something on the scenario of education. You know, this was college, mine was, you know, elementary school, public school, you know. So, you know, all I know is I was in this thread. It went crazy. I started getting all these tags on my Facebook where it was just tag after tag after tag. I had to turn it off because it was constant of me just, you know, seeing myself in handcuffs 8 years ago and just seeing myself mugshots, just seeing it, you know. And I mean, you know, what can you do? And it's nothing, you know. I'm an advocate. I want equality of education. I fight for justice, you know, as much, you know, much as I possibly can, for, you know, proper just laws, now, you know, since all this happened. But man,
yeah,
I don't. don't know why.
I think one of the things that I've seen in the various articles, you know, that have been online and elsewhere about the parallels of the two cases is, and what makes it interesting is, in your case, you were trying to get your children into a, and correct me if I'm wrong, into a better school system, a grammar school system,
yeah.
Correct?
Yes, absolutely.
As opposed to the celebrities, and basically we talk about the two celebrities, Lori Loughlin and Felicity Huffman.
But there's a larger...
There were 48 others,
yes.
You know, and all, you know, apparently very wealthy, who
very
are paying
well.
Six figures to try and get their kids into a prestigious university.
One would think
so
that...
So I think there's the big difference.
But yeah, but what would you think, just taking a step back, wouldn't you think... If you grow up wealthy, you have the best tutors, the best access. Why can't you just get into school?
Well, apparently some of these children, spawn of these celebrities, were as dumb as a box of rocks. And that's a technical term, by the way, from one educator to another. And I know there were quotes from the one daughter saying that, you know, oh, I hope I don't have to, you know, go to class because I'm only here to go to the parties, you know, something like that. So,
yeah.
But whereas your children, let's face it, they were qualified for the school. Did they mm-hmm. do well in the schools that you?
Oh, they exceeded. Let me tell you, they exceeded. They did so well, both of them. What really fascinated me about, especially my youngest daughter, she went third and fourth grade. Let me tell you something. The day we went in there and they gave me a tour, it was phenomenal, state of the art. And then they had an extra, they had all this land as far as for their science. They had this huge greenhouse. Then they had all this land and they did all this, you know, showing our kids how to, you know, plant and plant foods and, you know, and flowers. And it was just so, so awesome. All the latest computers. And at that time, smart boards were just coming out. And they had all the smart boards and stuff. It was just a phenomenal,
so
phenomenal
school. It was a student dream, educator's dream.
Absolutely.
I want to enroll there.
So, Kelly, we're gonna take a break, but we'll finish up and wrap up right after the break. So if you can hang on just a little bit longer and join us back. I'm myself, Kelly Pope, and Bill Cressy.
That's me.
And then we'll talk to you in a sec, okay?
Kelly Williams-Bowler is serving a 10-day sentence. She falsified residency records, and prosecutors say a private investigator even caught her red-handed on video living in the wrong district. Bowler says all she wanted to do was help her daughters escape their crime-ridden Akron neighborhood.
It's overwhelming. I'm exhausted. I did this for them, so there it is.
Kelly Williams-Bowler's decision to try to give her daughters a better life has now landed her behind bars. It started 4 years ago when Bowler, who lives in a poorer section of Akron, Ohio, sent her daughters to a highly ranked school in a neighboring district. The problem is, it wasn't her district, it was her father's, and her children weren't eligible to go there. She says she did it to keep them safe and that she lived part-time with her dad.
When my home got broken into, I felt it was my duty to do something else.
But school officials said she was cheating, getting a quality education for her daughters without paying the right taxes to fund it.
Those dollars need to stay home with our students.
The school system says Bowler lied about her address, falsified records, and when confronted, had her father file false court papers to game the system. The district even hired a private investigator to follow her. She was ordered to pay $30,000 in back tuition, but refused and was indicted.
Ask yourself, why would you believe a word she told you on the stand?
Bowler claims she was singled out.
This is not a murder trial. It's not.
I felt that some punishment or deterrent was needed for other individuals who might think to defraud the various school systems.
My girls need me. I've never, ever went a day without seeing them off. Never.
The case has now divided a city.
Why they chose this particular young lady, this particular girl, and not anyone else.
And left many wondering how far a mother should go to give her children a better life.
I don't think they wanted money. I think they wanted me to be an example.
We are back. Kelly Richmond Pope, Talking True Crime with Bill Cressy.
Yes, come on, Kelly. You are Kelly Richmond Pope, Associate Professor, DePaul University, filmmaker, TED Talk person. TED Talker. And you're something else. And now you can say nice things about me.
Well, you are attorney extraordinaire and associate professor. Yeah. Congratulations, newly tenured associate professor at Governor State. And Bill.
Known as
Professor Fry.
Thank you.
That's the trademark name. Don't try to use it. And we like to talk about crime. We find a lot of interesting stories that we text and email about. And tonight our theme is back to school, since we are both back to school, back to teaching.
Indeed we are.
And thought that we would join the conversation about the admission scandal. And so we have Kelly Williams Bowler on the line with us, and she's sharing her story. And you just heard clips from her 2011 case. And so she's back in the news because a lot of people are talking about the treatment that she received and even the coverage that her story received in comparison to the coverage that we are seeing now with not only the celebrities, but the indicted wealthy. There is a huge list of very wealthy people that paid a lot of money to get their kids in these elite schools. Did you know the ringleader of this whole thing is his child went to DePaul?
I had heard that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So that. Our name is in this story a little bit. But Kelly, what's next for you in terms of the people that want to hear from you? And are you doing any more interviews? And what's the future hold for you?
Well, right now, my first priority is I work in a classroom. I work with students with behaviors, and I absolutely love what I do because, I just try my best to encourage what I do on a daily basis, which is my passion as a kid. But, I do have some things lined up. Maybe I shouldn't talk about it yet because, I want to make sure that it's all in a row like it should be. But I definitely, speak at different colleges, universities, such as DePaul University, which is awesome. I'm just taking one day at a time. That's all you can do.
I'm sure you'll be glad when your name sort of fades out of the headlines.
On the other hand, they haven't, approached you with like a Real Housewives of admissions scandals or anything, have they, Kelly?
No, they have not, but I understand that these two ladies they do have a movie about this coming out.
Well, I think you deserve a movie too.
What's their movie going to be about? I mean, are we really going to empathize for them? Like, what? How? Think about their character. Are we really going to feel sad for them?
Well, that depends on the script. The script might make them look like really bad characters too.
Oh, that's true.
Who do they cast for it?
Yeah, that's true. So when we when we think about the parallels again between the case. Did you read up what some of the parents were doing to get their kids in these schools?
In the college admission
scandal.
Yeah, some of it was just ridiculous. Go ahead, Kelly.
Yeah, I did see that. Just bits and pieces. Of course, I didn't read a lot. I didn't read a lot of it. But I did see, like taking pictures and kind of like altering the pictures and putting their face onto different, I want to say kayaking or something. You're saying it wrong something, but they were like
crew, I think. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty bold. What do you think? What if I put my head on your body and then I apply to University of Notre Dame for law school?
Well, are you trying for like a football scholarship? Is that it?
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah. I don't know. Your head on my body would just look freakish. You might get into clown college, but that would be about it.
You think about Kelly just used her dad's address, who actually did live in the district, which I'm not saying is right. But when you think about some of the things that these families were doing, like paying people to take their SAT scores for the SATs for their kids. I wrote an article on my Forbes blog about this, and I want to get your feedback on this, Bill. And my question was, or my topic was, what happens when children need to be whistleblowers? Because the kids, do they have any accountability, any role in this, knowing, I'm sure, that some of them knew their parents were doing this?
They certainly did in some of the cases. I'm told in many of the cases, the kids didn't know.
Well, now let's see. If you are now part of a track team and you never ran track or you have a terrible score and you're now on the track team at a top university, how did you get there?
Well, they were never really on the team, but I know one of them, you know, called home and said, I don't know, I got this email saying I'm supposed to meet with Coach so-and-so. How did that happen?
So what do you do? I mean, it's a really awkward situation. Now, unlike Kelly's situation, her children were younger, so there was not much that they should do. But we're talking about young adults here.
They're 18, so they're legally liable.
Now, I'm thinking about Lori's case, and I would imagine that Kelly's story may not be mentioned in conjunction with Lori's case because Lori Loughlin is facing far more serious charges because she has a money laundering indictment. So we have a whole different ball game here. So, attorney, what does that look like when you have a money laundering indictment?
Well, in that case, the government can claw back all of the money that's involved. So in addition to any kind of fine and imprisonment, any of the monies that were paid can also be gotten back by the government. So it's also carries much harsher penalties than some of these other penalties, official corruption and things like that. So that could be really bad for her.
Do you think this happens a lot? Like, how prevalent do you think these types of parents paying off the schools, parents making big donations? Do you think this is just how it's done?
Well, I think you have to differentiate between, somebody giving a big donation or being a legacy and things like that from some of these really outlandish things that was going on. One of the worst parts of this story is, the kids, they knew the kids would do awful on the ACT or SAT. So they would, bribe or otherwise get a psychologist to say that the child has, this young person had a learning disability and as such could not take the SAT or ACT the way everyone else does, but would have it individually proctored. And that's where the proctors got indicted because they would be bribed to, have a ringer come in and take the exam.
So, Kelly, thank you so much for joining us tonight and sharing your story. Bill and I were going to take a quick break, but we appreciate your bravery of coming back and keep reliving this because I don't know. I might just be like, guys, I'm tired of talking about this. But it keeps following you. But I thank you so much and hope you can make it back to class and talk to my students one day soon.
Yes, and thank you both for having me on. And at the end of the day, I just want people to understand, yes, I did lie, and I do totally regret that moment. So I don't want people thinking, I definitely regret that moment. But, thank you. Thank you both for having me on.
Thank you for being on.
And so join us later tonight. More True Crime with Kelly Pope and
Bill Cressy.
All right.
Professor Fraud.
You love that name.
Oh, I do.
Okay, we'll be back in a second. Okay, so we're going to have to talk about this music, Mr. Cressy.
Well, do you know why that song, I selected that song as a bumper song?
So you could dance and look like dancing Bill Cressy?
That's right. But there's a little bit of trivia that goes with that song. That was the theme song for a television series that was filmed in Chicago. Do you know what television series that was?
I don't.
That was Crime Story starring Chicago's own Dennis Farina.
So maybe we should start doing trivia and have people call in and guess this stuff, huh?
I think we ought to come up with some, fraudulent prizes to give people.
This is Kelly Richmond Pope and Bill Cressy. And talking true crime.
And we're the partners in crime.
And we love this stuff. We just exchange articles and text and get really excited talking about all these cases.
Did you see this one?
And I think we keep trying to one-up each other. Like, I found this one.
You think we actually do that?
I think we are.
Well, let's go back to the college admission thing for a moment. And I was going on to this. I think one of the worst parts or worst stories that came out of it is the idea that under the Americans with Disabilities Act, students who have a legitimate learning disability are given accommodations for taking the standardized test, the ACT or the SAT. They would have psychologists either hoodwinked or bribed to sign letters saying that these children of these, you know, wealthy or celebrities had a learning disability so they could take the test one-on-one with a proctor. They would bribe the proctor.
But let me ask you this. Yep. Who's more at fault? The parent, the psychologist, the proctor, or the student?
I don't think you can, in this situation, say who's more at fault. They're all at fault.
But they're not all equal.
It depends on how culpable they were. Did they realize what was going on?
Oh, come
on.
Of course they did.
Assuming
they
all did.
The psychologist knew. Come on.
Then as a professional, he is particularly loathsome in
or
my
she.
Mind. Or she. That's
and,
right.
And what should happen?
They should get their license either suspended, definitely, or possibly pulled. I mean, that's just so wrong.
But I'm going to put the and I don't know if any of my students from my class tonight are listening, but I'm going to try to think like they might think and how we talk tonight in class.
Sure.
Are we really hurting anybody if we just sort of call ourselves in this group and we just get some extra time? Who are we really harming?
You're harming the... Well, right now you're harming the students who really do have learning disabilities.
Well, they still get their time.
But you're going to be throwing their credibility into question, you know. Plus, it hurts all the students who didn't get the extra time and didn't get the proctor, you know, didn't get a one-on-one.
They didn't pay the right amount of money.
Well, there you go. But the most fascinating, though, part of this story was the one guy that they would hire to come in and take the tests. You know, the ringer for these kids, he is supposedly so good at taking these standardized tests that in one case, he would just say, you know, what score do you want? And he would answer the questions and get the score. And in one case, they said, that's too high. My kid's obviously more stupid than that. You know, make it a little lower. And he was like, no problem. I can do that.
So again, here, would you, if you had that skill... If you were an expert,
I think both of us have that skill.
Well, if you were an expert test taker, mm-hmm. and you could make $50,000 a pop for taking the CPA exam for people, $50,000, would you do it? And you know you're not going to get caught. Would you do it?
Well, I think both of us have taken the CPA exam, and
sure.
would probably say that's too grueling. No, give me another test. Give me something easy like the bar exam.
Or I need more money. What's your price?
I still wouldn't take the CPA exam again. Yeah, but okay. Let's theoretically. That's just wrong. As I tell my students, with apologies to Spike Lee, sometimes it comes down to doing the right thing.
But this is the thing. The question that we were answering tonight is, why is fraud everywhere? Fraud is everywhere because there are so many people involved. When you think about this scandal, there's so many parties. You know, you have the test taker, you have the parents, you have the students, you have the coaches. I mean, you have other students that might know of this. I'm sure that the daughters, all these kids told somebody.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people that are just allowing this system to just keep rolling.
Well, what I tell my students is it has to do with the noise. And that is all of us have that little voice in the back of our minds that says, you know, that's wrong. Don't do it. Danger.
But we also have another voice, Bill. That is, what is your price?
Well, there's that voice, but there's also the noise outside.
Sure, sure.
There's the noise saying, this is how you get ahead. In order to get ahead, you
sure.
have to go to the best school. You have to go to the best preschool. For goodness sakes, there are people bribing to get their kids into preschools.
Sure,
you know?
Sure. Sure.
And I think you and I have seen, you look at some of the wealthiest people out there who've been very successful, they didn't go to those highly, respected, highly selective schools.
So. Well, we'll keep this debate going for a little bit longer. We're going to take a break here. And again, you're with Kelly Pope and Bill Cressy. You're talking true crime on WGN 720.
Come fly with me, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic
It's clear
blues,
that I'm sending some music selections
well,
next week.
Well, I'm just kind of old school. But that, of
clearly
course,
old school.
Was a song that was featured prominently in Catch Me If You Can.
Oh, yeah.
The Frank
okay,
Abagnale
okay.
story.
Yeah,
yes.
But come on, man. We need some upbeat.
Sinatra. It's classic.
Classic to you.
To me. Okay.
So welcome
I'm
back.
I'm not young and hip like you.
I'm going to make you young and hip, but at least you're not. You're waltzing, so that looks a little bit better.
Thank you. Thank you.
And you do that step. Better than the other stuff you call
yeah,
yourself doing.
No, yeah, that's just awful. I will agree. That's awful.
You're listening to True Crime tonight with Kelly Richmond Pope and
DePaul University and
Bill Cressy of Governor State University, and also known as Professor Fraud. He loves this. So
I love it. Hey, you know, I put the little R in a circle after
that. I need it. What could be my theme name?
Oh.
I don't know.
We'll work on it, you know.
Special K.
That's
from like break
I think
from
that's taken.
From Breakin'. Not the series. Did you ever watch the movie Breakin'?
Yeah. Oh yes.
Yes. She was Special K. Yeah. That was her breakdancing name.
Well, I think we'll come up with something, and then if you have the same dream I have, it's to sell Professor Fraud to Marvel Studios and retire.
Okay. You know? All right.
Okay. But speaking of my institution, Governor's State University, we have someone on the phone who's going to talk to us for the next segment here, next couple
yeah,
of segments.
But remember, what our theme tonight is back
yes.
to school. And, you know, it's always an exciting time when all the students are back and you're working on your syllabus and you just get so energized seeing all the new people there. But there are lots of scams right around this time.
Oh, and a lot of crime, which is why September has been declared National Campus Safety Awareness Month.
I never knew that until 11:09 on September 16th that there was such a thing.
Well, and that's why I invited my chief, if you will, Chief James McGee of the Governor State University Police Department, to join us. Chief, are you there?
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to meet you guys.
Well, I have lots of questions for you, Chief, so I'm going to let Bill start, but I have a lot of questions.
Sure. Let's just get a little background on you, Chief. You are at Governor State University, which you and I both know is the State University of Suburban Chicago in beautiful University Park, Illinois.
Absolutely.
Yes. And it is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. And but for 45 to 50 years, it was what they would call a senior level university. Undergrads had to be of junior and senior ranking or status to get in there, and then graduate school. But then 5 years ago, we started taking freshmen, and we opened a dormitory out there.
That's correct.
Now, how long have you been with Governor State, Chief?
Now, I've been with Governor State for 21 years now, with a law enforcement career of over 30 years.
So you've seen all these changes out there.
Yes, I have. Yes, I have. We are glad and we're excited. We're in our fall semester at the university, and we have our largest freshman class that we just admitted within the university. So the university administrators, the campus, the entire campus is happy right now.
Well, yeah, I know we're really energized out there. And but as I said before, it is National Campus Safety Awareness Month. And now, is there like an association of police chiefs or whatever that specialize in college forces?
Oh, absolutely. There's tons of different university police chiefs that are out there. But one of the things that Governor State at this time prouds itself, as we say, is that this Governor State is one of the safest campus in the state of Illinois and the Northeast Indiana, and that was granted to us by the Department of Education for the last 4 years.
My goodness. Now, those are statistics, and there's something that I'm going to refer to, a federal law called the Clery Act. The full name is the Gene Clery Disclosure of Campus Security Policy and Campus Crime Statistics Act. That's a mouthful.
Yes, it is.
What does that entail, Chief?
Okay. Well, the Clery Act is a consumer protection law, and it aims to provide transparency around the campus crime policy and statistics. In short, the Jeanine Clery Disclosure of Campus Security and Police Campus Crime Statistics Act, commonly known as the Clery Act. It was back in 1986 when Jeanine Clery, she was a freshman at Pennsylvania Lehigh University, and she was murdered and sexually assaulted in her campus residence hall. And her school had information of students of about 38 violent crimes that had occurred over the 3 years prior, and they failed to provide that information to the community, which could have prevented the murder and assault on Jeanine Clery. And so from that, that's where the act came, and that's why it's formally known, or it's known as the Jeanine Clery Act, formerly known as the Campus Security Act.
Right. Now, if you look into the case, it's funny. It's really transparency, disclosure about crime statistics at every college in the United States has to file these reports every year. Has to publicize it, put it, you know, distribute it to the students and put it on their websites. But one of the things it does, it makes the students more aware of the crime in their campus community, because Jeanine Clery, if I recall, her dorm had, you know, security sensors at the doors where you needed to swipe a card to get in, but the students would prop the doors open, and that's how this offender got in. So yeah, I think it's good that the parents know this information, that the students know this information, so they can act properly.
Year during our orientation, we make sure that the students and the parents are aware of our crime statistics, and it's one of the questions that I pose during the orientation to guide them. And as I look at it, is give the parents some homework. Hey, you ought to know where you're sending your child. You should know how safe that campus is, and we're required by law to present that information. And each institution of higher ed is required to present that information just as well.
So, Chief, a question that I had for you, and as we're talking about campus security, one of the questions that I've always been challenged with is, do I do an active shooter training with my class at the beginning of each term? And, you know, when we were younger, we would be in the elementary schools and we would do fire drill training. And so, you know, we'd go out in the hallway and cover our heads. And that was just part of what we did. And just in the recent news, I've become more concerned about if it's something that I should make part of my syllabus and talk to my students and actually do some type of active shooter training. And I want to let you know, I'm a graduate of Virginia Tech. That's where I got my PhD from. And so that what happened at Virginia Tech is very dear to my heart. I had a colleague who lost his daughter during that shooting. So it's something that I've wondered and thought about. Am I bringing more negative attention to it if I tell my students, okay, we're going to do an active shooter drill, or should I just pretend like it can't happen? And we know that's never safe either.
Absolutely. It's unfortunate at the time that we're living in now that these hate crimes are taking place, but that's something that must happen at Governor State University. That's one of the first things as part of the syllabus, is that professor discuss active shooter drills, active shooters, what to do. We pass out a leaflet that gives the information as to, do you know where your quickest exit if an active shooter does take place? Do you know that you should secure the door? Do you know that that help would be on its way? Do you know that you should dial 911 immediately? Do you know you should be quiet during these encounters? And in fact, this coming Wednesday, we do have that upcoming training, active shooter training for faculty, staff, and students at Governor State. And it's something that, again, I hate that the time we're living in, but yeah, we must train, we must advise our students, we must be aware of our surroundings at all times.
So something also that's concerning to me is I often teach in a classroom that has two exits. And so, and I'm not trained law enforcement. So, you know, I think about what is my role in securing a classroom? You know, is it Kelly, get out of there? Or is it Kelly, do I really need to focus on how a law enforcement professional would be trained? And I get nervous about it. I really do. Especially, I teach in a class tonight. Yeah. Has two entrance. Actually, I'm sorry. Yeah, has two ways, two exits.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And that's one of the first things that we point out to the faculty is that be aware of your entrance points. If you hear a loud noise in the hallway, absolutely open the door and take a look and see what it is. And if folks are running because it's an active shooter, then making every attempt to secure the door. If the door can't be secured, then absolutely grab some tables, grab some desks, prop those items up against the desk, up against the door. Anything to keep that active shooter out, as we've learned that most of these incidents are over in 9 or 10 minutes.
Sure.
Yeah. And if you can remain safe for those 9 or 10 minutes, help is definitely on its way. Law enforcement has changed their way of training for active shooters. Before, as we look back upon the Columbine situation where that event folded over 9, 10, 12 hours, mm-hmm. and there was still a large unexpectancy. However, now in today's training, we are going and we're moving directly towards that shooter. We're not going to stop until we get to that shooter.
You know, I did not know about this Campus Safety Awareness Month, but it's definitely something that I think we should talk about and train more. And Bill, I really appreciate you bringing this topic mm-hmm. to the show tonight because it's important.
It truly is. And it's funny. Now, Chief, how large a force do you have there at Governor State?
Now, with Governor State, we have 12 officers, 12 full-time officers and 6 part-time officers. And we have a total enrollment of about 4,000 students. But again, we're typical, such as other institutions our size, as far as the number of staffing goes. So we rely upon our mutual aid agreements that we have and our relationships that we have with our local municipality, our county municipality, as well as the state agencies just as well.
Well, Chief, we're going to have to go to a break. Can you stay with us for a while longer?
Absolutely.
Okay, because one of the things I want to bring out is an incident that happened right next to our campus a couple of weeks ago that the Chief's force worked on, and that was that train incident. So
absolutely. Okay. Not a problem. Yes.
Let's go to the break then, and
we'll be back.
We'll be back.
Thank you. I like this. Did you pick this song?
No.
See? Going with Mike's judgment. Thank you, Mike. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Bringing some youth. Thank you. Welcome back.
Okay, Chief. This, by the way, this is Professor Fraud Bill Cressy, Associate Professor at Governor State University. And across from me is
Kelly Pope.
Associate Professor at DePaul University, and on the line is my Chief James McGee of the Governor State University Police. Now, tell me, did you like that music, Chief?
Oh, absolutely.
See? Told you. Nobody wants to hear that stuff you're playing.
Oh, Bill Shannon, come on. Okay, so we got you back on real quick, Chief. Now, you're the head of a police department at the university. Some schools have police departments. Some just have security departments. What's the difference?
Yes. Well, campus police focus on community policing. Campus police also have different disciplinary options. Campus police also focus on prevention. Campus police also focus on undergoes different training than campus security. Campus security, there are some instances where they're not armed. They're not sworn officers. They don't go to the police academy. And our campus police go to the same police academies that our local state, municipality, and county police officers attend.
So, Chief, let me ask you this. If if you're at a university that doesn't have the police force that you're talking about, then they may not be the ones that you want to call in an emergency. You might want to call the actual police, right?
Well, it depends if they're armed or not. I'm sure if they're armed, then they have certain training that they go through. And in today's time with the active shooters and so forth, I'm sure they're training towards those things. But those campuses that do not have armed security, then I would suggest a strong working relationship with the local municipality. And I know a lot of times we tend to look at the after effects and what happens if things go wrong, but we like to focus on the prevention side of things just as well. And I like to believe that there were a lot of things that came out prior to the actual incident at Virginia Tech at Northern Illinois.
Yes.
So one of the things that we focus on at Governor State is we have a student concerns team. That student concerns team is that first level that when an incident takes place, or if a student is not meeting the grades, or if someone's reporting in that, hey, this student has been isolated, haven't seen him in a couple of days, this student has been acting strange, that's where it kicks in at that first level, so that administration and so that staff on campus can make contact with that student to make sure that everything is okay. Or if an incident does transpire at a little higher level than that, then we have what we refer to as our campus threat assessment team.
So, Chief,
I
have about 1,000 more questions to ask you.
Can you stick with us through the news and talk to us some more?
Absolutely.
Very good.
I feel young.
Yeah, I feel out of place.
You are listening to True Crime with Kelly Richmond Pope and Bill Cressy.
And on the line is my chief, Chief McGee of the Governor State University Police Force. And
Chief, I'm excited to talk to you. You really have me thinking about safety in a different way. And you've made me realize how much I don't know about staying safe on a college campus.
Absolutely.
One of the things that I always get nervous about, and I need to research to see if I have a police force or just security. And I don't know if it's a police force, so I don't want to say this, but I always get nervous about leaving the building at 9 o'clock at night by myself. And tonight when I was leaving class, there was one student, female student. I said, you know, let's walk out together. I don't want to leave you in the building alone. So I get nervous about being downtown sometimes that late. But I need to look into what type of security escort you might have walking to the car. So you've really helped me think about safety in a new way.
Yeah, well,
yes.
One of the things, it's funny, I was walking around the South Loop this evening, and you see on a lot of different buildings around the South Loop these blue lights. And it's because so many of the South Loop of Chicago is essentially a campus town between DePaul and Columbia and
Roosevelt,
all the rest.
East West.
And those blue lights mean something, right, Chief?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The blue lights are our emergency telephones. If there's an incident that happens in our parking lots or throughout the campus, and that's a direct two-way communication to the police department, where our dispatcher will be able to see the exact location where that telephone call is coming from, and it will have an open microphone to be able to hear what's going on around and to be able to dispatch a police officer or a community service officer, security officer, to that location. But one of the other things that we have on campus, and I'm sure the other institutions have just as well, is what we have is our LiveSafe application. That's a two-way application that's on the cell phones that you can download that app, and you can be able to communicate directly to our police department, to our dispatch center. But one of the features that it also does, it allows you to do a virtual escort. And when I say virtual escort, meaning that you and a friend that's in your contact, based on geographics, the map, that it allows your destination, where you're traveling to, and that friend can virtually walk with you.
That's
and
so
if
important.
You veer,
so
oh
important.
Yeah, and if you veer off that path, it will send them an alert as well as alert our public safety department that the person is not taking the shortest route or the fastest route to that location. And it gives us an opportunity to communicate, whether it's text message, whether it's to pick up the phone and dial 911 to call us. But it does allow us to have that opportunity, and that's something that we at Governor State has just instituted, and I'm sure it's at other institutions as well.
In fact, I was just showing Kelly the LiveSafe app on my smartphone. I keep it on a separate screen all by itself so that I don't have to, you know,
Some
so often
fumble through it and figure out where it is.
Like, which one is it in? Which screen is it? I have, keep it on the very last screen all by itself, so when you need it, it's there for you.
How at your campus, this is a two-part question. How well do students understand and know what safety measures are there for them is the first part of the question. And my question really comes from me following the story of Ying Yang Zhang, who was a student at the University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana, who,
yeah.
Have you followed this story, Chief?
Yes, I have.
Just a devastating story. And so, you know, she was kidnapped and murdered and dismembered. And I wonder, you know, if some of these safety measures could have saved her life, and how well students tend to know what's available for them.
Yes. Well, I tell you, that's one of the main objectives of campus police officers, is to have and build that relationship with the campus community. It's not just out pulling over, writing citations, writing parking tickets, but it's to be there for the students, to talk to the students, have that familiarity with the faculty and staff, so that there's a heightened awareness, and so that if something does happen or there are signs of things happening, so that they'll be able to reach out and communicate. One of our roles also is to do presentations to the different faculty and staff. And as I mentioned, we've got one that's coming up Wednesday, an active shooter presentation. But we do that, and we try to do that on a monthly basis to inform the community of the potential dangers or things that could happen, and to give them all the information they need to better arm themselves. And that's one of the things that we pride ourselves on, Governor State Campus, is to make sure that we build that close, tight-knit relationship with our community.
Chief, do you feel comfortable talking about the Ying Yang Zhang story? Since you've said you were following it, you followed it.
Yes. It's a tragic situation. I would say that if there was a form of a safety application that, such as the LiveSafe application, that there is a strong possibility that at least police officers would have been able to track her, because the only thing she would have had to do at that point in time was to just hit the 911 button on her phone, and that would have alerted the police department. And what happens on the dispatch screen now, dispatch is able to see the exact location and to be able to track that person, as long as that person is not separated from that phone. They would be able to track at real time and be able to respond immediately.
Yeah, no, that is really one of the parts of this application I like, is the geo-tracker portion of it. Because Governor State, we've got a very large campus, correct?
Yes, 750 acres.
Yeah, it's a very large, and as a result, you have a number of marked squad cars. They're big SUVs. They can travel all over. And you've got officers on bicycles when the weather's good.
Yes.
And you also have something called T3 motion devices. What are those?
Now, our T3 motions are similar to Segways, with the exception they have three wheels. What we found is, though, the stability on that for some of our older officers were much greater, and the officers can spend a larger amount of time on them without exhaustion. So, yes, we do pride ourselves, and more importantly, it takes the officers out of the police cars, and it places the officers right there with the community. So we use them as a community building a tool to build that community relationship with our students, faculty, and staff.
Well, speaking of that community relationship, there was an incident that occurred on our campus or adjacent to our campus, because right alongside our campus, we have some train tracks, including tracks that are used by Amtrak. And a couple of weeks ago, there was a tragedy where the Amtrak train was coming through and there was a truck crossing one of the grade crossings, and the train hit the truck. The driver of the truck was killed, but the train also derailed.
Yes.
And I have to give you kudos, Chief. You and your force really jumped right in.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, it's a very unfortunate accident. Too many times we see pedestrians, we see drivers that are impatient and just does not want to wait until the train clears, and they try to beat the gate. And unfortunately, each time it ends in a horrific incident. This time the train did derail. It was one of our Illini trains that I believe it had the destination that we're going down, that was going down to southern Illinois, and the train was moving about 75 to 80 miles an hour. And again, it hit the box truck and shortly after derailed. So I believe there was upwards of 150 to 175 passengers that were aboard this train. About four or five that were injured had to deboard from the train, and there was a gas station that was adjacent to the tracks where they walked to. And they were out sitting and waiting for assistance and waiting for service. And our mutual aid plan kicked in that we have for the local municipality, the Will County, and the state, which allowed us to deliver services to those individuals right away. Those who were injured were able to get to the hospital. And the others that were forced to wait around, we opened our doors at Governor State to provide them a much more enjoyable place to be able to rest instead of sitting out in the parking lot before they finally reached their final destination. I believe we had maybe 130 that came over to our campus for approximately about 5 or 6 hours.
Chief, we're going to have to take a short break. Can you stick with us afterward, and we'll finish talking about campus security, okay?
Okay.
Bill just doesn't know how to handle this new sound, Mike, so he's so confused.
Sounds like the record's skipping. I don't know.
Oh, my goodness. You are back with Kelly Richmond Pope and Bill Cressy, True Crime, here on WGN Radio 720.
And on one line, we have Chief James McGee of the Governor State University Police, and we've got something for you, Chief.
Chief, we have a caller from Beth who has a really great question. And Beth, thank you so much for the question, because your question is exactly what I was asking Chief about when I was thinking about how do I introduce this to my students. So, Beth, thank you for the call and joining us tonight.
Well, first of all, this is the first time I'm hearing your show, and I'm very, very installed.
Thank you.
My thing is that a lot of the things that adults do to relieve their anxiety about these situations that are becoming all too common is we try to be proactive. But the kids, what I'm hearing from the kids is when we have a drill. And now I don't know how old you guys are, but I remember used to having to get under my desk because the Scholastic Reader told us there was going to be a mushroom.
You said Scholastic Reader. You went back.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Beth, you and I are contemporaries.
Yeah. Well, because, tornado drills. But that's what my kids had to deal with, tornado drills. But we used to have to dive down under our desks in case there was a bomb. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know there wasn't going to be a bomb, but our little hearts were beating so fast. So my little gal pal in Texas, her name's Savannah, she called me one day and she said, she calls me Mama. She said they had a drill today in school about a shooter. And she said, I we knew there wasn't a shooter. We knew it was a drill, but do you really know it's a drill? And she said, I felt just as scared as if it was really going to happen. And I didn't know what to tell her.
That's a great, I mean, it's a great question. It's the, and I don't know if you were listening earlier, but that's the question I ask the chief when I start the beginning of my class. Every quarter, since in the past 4 years, I've wondered, should I do active shooter training with my students? Am I making them more nervous by drilling them, or am I better off never mentioning it? So, chief, I'd love to hear you address Beth's question, because it's a great one.
Sure. Now, my recommendation is also the FBI's recommendations as well. You have to train for it. You have to train. You have to be able to put yourself in that situation to imagine it. I think it's also great that the students feel as though that it's actually real, because it's going to allow them to now act accordingly, to act that if they're going to hide in a closet, if they're going to lock the doors, if they're, what are they going to do? These are the things that the students have to think about. What if this active shooter is right outside my doors? Am I going to lock the door? Am I going to hide in the closet? Am I going to hide under my desk? Am I going to run to another room? These are the things that the FBI trains us on. The FBI says you have to run, hide, and fight. And if this shooter now enters the room and there's no alternative, now it's a life or death situation, and you have to fight at that point in time. Now you have to utilize the things that are there, that are present in that classroom, whether it's the desk, whether it's the books, whether it's the items that are in there. You're going to have to fight for survival.
Chief, you know what I think, though, to follow up on Beth's question, it's almost like we need to then follow this up with some mental health training, because you've now inflicted a level of anxiety in everyone. So how can we help them come down from that?
And that's exactly what I told Savannah. I told her, it's better to know, honey, and find out it's going to be okay, than to not know and it not be okay. That's the best I could do.
Absolutely, and that's one of the things that we pride ourselves, again, at Governor State, is that we also have mental health training that goes along with it. So it's going to be that mental health training is there to provide some tools that the students and the faculty and staff will be able to utilize during these active shooter drills, before and after, as we look and we look at our Virginia Tech incident that occurred, that was one of the areas in the after action report that Virginia failed to do was the mental health awareness. And as we see at local conference and national conferences, that's the big topic that everyone's looking at, and that's the mental health of our students, our faculty, and our staff.
Beth, thank you for calling in. Chief, it was great having you on. Really appreciate it. What can I say? But this is Kelly and Bill on WGN Chicago.
Okay. It's 12:05, and I'm here with Bill Cressy. I'm Kelly Richmond Pope.
Changing my name from Professor Fraud to Dancing Bill.
Okay. Stick to teaching. Stick to teaching, my friend. So, it's been a great week in Fraud.
Yes, it has.
And you are listening to True Crime with us. And
it's our back-to-school special.
It's our back-to-school special. And back-to-school sometimes means watching Charlie Brown on TV. But for us, it means, what are all the scams and frauds and crimes that happen on campus?
Involving higher education and low-down fraud.
Yeah. So what we do is we exchange a lot of stories.
Yeah.
And we try to, I think, one-up each other on finding the best scams and schemes that people are victimized to. And so what we hope to do is share some schemes with you and hopefully give you some tips on how to protect yourself from being a victim. So what did you find this week, Mr. Chris, Dr. Chrissy?
Let's see. Well, there is one that we've both known people that have fallen for this, and that's the secret shopper scam.
Oh, yeah, guys, this one's a good one. And so this can happen to a lot of people, but it's happening most to students.
To college students. It seems that the fraudsters are targeting college students because, let's face it, college students, they need some extra cash for, you know, whatever they're going to do on the weekends and things like that.
They need cash for books and pencils.
And beer and, well, yeah, books and pencils. Yeah, that's right. Some of the experts feel that college students are not as aware of checks. You know, those pieces of paper that we used to fill out and send money around with, you know, that maybe not you, young Kelly, but I certainly grew up writing checks.
I know I look very youthful, but yes. I'm a little bit older than you think.
Oh, okay. but college students really aren't aware, and this is a perfect scam for them to be victimized.
Well, so think about what they're vulnerable on. It's lack of awareness, lack of information, because when's the last time you wrote a check? And do they even know what a checkbook is?
Well, I actually ask my students, you know, how many of them have checking accounts? Well, just about all of them have checking accounts. That's what they're called, checking accounts. But when, you know, how often, you know, I ask, you know, how many of you have written a check in the last week?
How many of you have touched a check ever in your life?
Well, they may have, and that's the problem. They may have touched one at one point, but they really don't know how checks work, and especially the way that checks clear banks.
Or even how to fill one out. I remember I took my first accounting class in ninth grade at Jordan High School in Durham, North Carolina, and we did a practice set. And part of that practice set was writing out checks, pretending that you were the accountant for this business, mm-hmm. and writing out checks so you pay to the order of, how to endorse a check. Like, those are things that we just sort of take for granted that they may not know how to handle.
Right, because everything is paid electronically now. You get on the web, you enter your password, and boom, the money goes flying through the air. But you write a check. How does that really work? They don't really know. So the secret shopper scam is perfect for them to be victimized. And the scam works like this. Usually it starts with an email sent to students. And again, they seem to be targeting college students.
Just to add a point, do you know how many emails are sent annually?
Annually?
Annually. This is a trivia question. How many emails are sent annually? Take a guess.
Well,
take a guess.
100 billion.
107 trillion.
Wow.
107 trillion emails are sent annually.
I misunderstood. 100 billion is how many emails I get annually.
Oh, please. Yeah. Okay. How many emails are sent each day?
That's 107 trillion divided by 365, right?
You're an accountant, right?
There you go. Yeah.
294 billion each day. Okay. So please continue with the shopper scam.
So the college student gets this email. And we unfortunately had an incident at Governor State with one of our students who sadly went to our career center looking for and applying for a part-time job, walked back to their dorm, and by the time they got there, here's this email. They thought it had something to do with applying for the part-time job. And it's an email that offers them to make quick money, easy money.
No such thing.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. Well, you and I know that. Through a secret shopper strategy or a secret shopper job. And this is where retailers will hire people, and this is an actual profession, that will secretly go into places and observe the way that the retail operation is working, see if they're following the procedures. McDonald's made this huge.
Hence the name Secret Shopper.
McDonald's, that's why McDonald's all kind of look the same, because they send secret shoppers in to report back that they are following procedures and protocols. Colonel Harlan Sanders used to do it himself. He'd go into a store. If they didn't follow, he would, you know, take the equipment out of the kitchen. But the way it works is the student said, hey, we're going to hire you as a secret shopper, and we're going to send you some materials. And then a couple of days later, they get a big, you know, envelope or big box full of materials. And in there, it will be a check for, let's say, $2,000. with instructions to take that $2,000 check, deposit it in their checking account, and then go to, say, Walmart or some other store, buy gift cards, okay, totaling up to, say, $1,500.
And then once you buy your gift card, then you scratch off the back of the gift card.
There you go.
And reveal a code.
Right. And then you are to send the account number and the PIN code
to the number on the gift card.
With the number on the gift card, you send that to the people who are your employers, supposedly. And so then they've got essentially $1,500 in gift codes. And you're told that you can keep the remaining $500 as your payment for your services rendered.
Now, what happens 2 weeks later?
2 weeks later, they get notified by their bank. Oh, you know that $2,000 check you deposited?
I'm taking it back because that check bounced.
Yeah, it's bogus. There was no such account or whatever. And it's probably drawn on some bank far off in some small town. So it would take 2 weeks for it to clear. In the meantime, the bad guys have already spent the $1,500.
And you know what you've probably already done? If you're a college student, you've probably spent the money too. So now you're account is overdrawn.
Yep. And plus they'll charge you a bounce check fee too. And you're out $2,030.
Sure.
And you're in a lot of trouble. So
do you know that 90% of all emails is spam and viruses? 90%.
Ooh, 90%?
Yeah.
That's wow. I think I get about 40% of them in my various email accounts. So anyways,
a great scheme, though.
It's
a great scheme. On our scheme list.
Schemometer.
Schemometer from 1 to 10, that scheme is an 8.5.
Yeah, and the perpetrators are hardly ever caught. So
and the target always needs money, always wants money, and is eager to do anything for it quick. Oh, yeah. What? These are famous last words that I was talking about in class tonight, which are, all I have to do is fill in the blank. Yeah. Whatever the fill in the blank is, it's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the college students are the perfect pigeons for such a thing.
Sure. So, anyway. Sure.
Well, you know what's coming up tonight, Kelly?
No, what's coming up?
Tonight at 7 o'clock, WGN Television. Celebrate 25 years of Chicago Television's number one morning show. Watch a live two-hour special full of memorable moments on the WGN-TV Morning News 25th Anniversary Special. And that's tonight at 7 o'clock.
Well, you are listening to Kelly Pope.
And Bill Cressy.
And it's True Crime, WGN Radio 720. Okay, so we are back. I think as the time progresses, his moves get crazier and crazier. So this is Kelly.
His would be Professor Bill Cressy, Professor Fraud. And that across from me is...
I'm Kelly Pope, and you are listening to True Crime on WGN Radio 720. This is our back-to-school special.
Yes,
we both went back to teaching this. I'm on quarters, so I say quarters. I think you're on semesters.
And we started a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. So it's just back-to-school for me.
Back-to-school is a relative term.
It's back-to-school for and kids and everything. And so back-to-school means what are those good back-to-school scams. And so hopefully you'll learn some things and it can protect you from ever being victimized. And so Bill and I do a lot of exchanging of articles throughout the week. And I think we are constantly trying to one up each other on, hey, look at my article. And so Bill, I sent you an article that just sort of gets under your skin. Now, the last one we talked about before the break was about students getting scammed in secret shopper schemes.
Right.
My article is a little bit different. It's about Stony Brook University. A Stony Brook University professor stole more than $200,000 in cancer research funds.
Oh.
$250,000. And guess what? He pled not guilty.
Well, you know, how low can you go? You know, I guess maybe, you know, everyone's entitled to a defense, as we say in law school. So
what he did, classic scheme. He was a professor, an associate professor in the Department of Pathology and director of cancer metabolomics at Stony Brook's Renaissance School of Medicine and when over $200,000 in grant funds was diverted to shell companies.
Oh.
So maybe we should define what a shell company is for our listeners that may not know what a shell company is.
A shell company is, well, it's very easy to create a company.
Sure.
You can not even incorporate it. You can simply file paperwork to what's called a DBA, a doing business as, where you use a phony name and create the company and you file some paperwork with your county clerk. But then these days it's so easy just to go online and you can incorporate or get an LLC, a limited liability company, created online. And suddenly you've got something that looks like a legitimate company with a, you know, with a name, you know, ABC Associates, whatever. And but you actually control it. So you have checks made out to ABC Associates. And you are the person in charge of who gets paid, and that goes to the checking account for ABC Associates, because with the paperwork from creating that shell company, you can go to a bank and open a checking account.
Sure. And in this case, what the professor did is he set up these shell companies, and he made it seem like he was providing research items for equipment for his cancer-related research projects by, guess what, submitting fraudulent electronic invoices. Mm. You know who else submitted fraudulent invoices? Rita Cronwell from Dixon, Illinois. Why?
You know, she was featured, that story was featured in an award-winning documentary called All the Queen's Horses.
I wonder who did that.
That would have been you, Kelly. Yes, you were the producer and director of All the Queen's Horses.
Well, yeah. So back to this guy, his shell companies, his submitting fraudulent electronic invoices to receive payments for equipment, goods, and services that were never received. And all he did, he moved the money from the shell company to his personal bank accounts. Simple.
Yeah. Yeah.
Easy.
Well, that kind of scheme is not that unusual. We actually had that going on at a couple of institutions of higher education in the Chicago area in the last few years.
Sure.
I was for a while on the audit committee at the College of DuPage.
Ooh.
And they had some scandalous stuff going on out there. But one of the things that kind of broke it was they had someone in the radio station out there, the chief engineer, who was supposedly purchasing equipment for the radio station and services, but the services were never provided. The equipment was never procured. And one of the stories I had heard, I'm not sure exactly how true this is, it kind of hurts me, was a couple of young people working at the station were looking for a piece of equipment they supposedly bought but never did because they had never seen one of these things before. It was a turntable. So that hurt,
I know you know what a turntable is.
Oh gosh, I've got my collection of vinyl that
vinyl's back.
So they tell me. So I'm all set for that. So, get my Sinatra records out, and I'm all set. But and then that we also had at another university in the Chicago area. In fact, I'm not even going to name this one. But they had a situation where, like this case at Stony Brook in New York, the school received a grant and was for about $250,000 to purchase some photocopying equipment. And so a person at the school was put in charge of getting this equipment. And sure enough, he said the place to go to was, I'm going to change some names to protect the guilty, XYZ Company, because they're the best. So sure enough, the photocopying equipment got shipped, and an invoice came in from XYZ for just under $250,000, the full amount of the grant. A couple of years later, they got another grant for $250,000, and now the purchasing department went out to the same company that shipped that first photocopier and said, hey, we want another one just the same. How much is it going to cost? And they said, about $125,000. And they're like, wow, the prices really came down. He said, no, actually, they went up. What turned out was the first guy bought the equipment himself for $125,000 and then turned around, sold it to the school for $250,000 and pocketed the $125,000 difference.
Now, how did it get caught?
How he got caught was when this occurred, when they found out on this second purchase, this guy, the perpetrator had retired at that point, and they found out that, you know, wait, we paid $250,000, and then they looked into it, and they found out that the XYZ company was actually a company that this guy owned where he rehabbed kitchens on the side. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of put all the pieces together from that. And since it was a grant from the federal government, the inspector general of this particular department of the federal government got involved, and things got messy after that. The interesting thing is, when I present this case to my students, I ask them, you know, what they think about it. There's always a number of students who say, well, look, they were willing to pay $250,000 anyhow. So what did he really do wrong? He just, you know, made some extra profit for himself.
But that means that he didn't fill out the conflict of interest form at his job, because he should, if he had filled that out, he would have disclosed that he was the owner of this company. That would have been a conflict.
Indeed.
That's what he did wrong.
And all employees also have a fiduciary duty to their employer of loyalty, which includes giving the employer the bargain, you know,
sure,
and the benefit of the bargain. So that is also wrong. And that went to court and it got eventually worked out. But the type of scheme of using shell companies and such to separate universities or colleges from their money is fairly easy and seems to be fairly frequent. So
I wonder what's going to happen to him. I wonder if he'll lose his tenure. I'm joking. It's late.
Well, I just got tenure, so I hope not.
Well, I mean, he did steal some money from school.
Yeah,
so
no,
I don't know.
That I think is one of those things that they list so you can lose tenure.
You know
tenure.
What? We should contact him. Maybe he'll come join us on the show.
Not while litigation is pending. I don't think his lawyers would like that.
Come on, why not? Well, yeah. He did plead not guilty.
Yeah,
but
there you go. But, you know, the question is, how much of that money can he use to pay for a good lawyer?
None.
Yeah.
None. He'll get, maybe, you know what you could do? Hmm. You could volunteer your services.
I'm not a member of the New York Bar, so
I knew you had some excuse.
Yeah, well, you know, I got to. That's why, you know, that's being a good lawyer is knowing how to get out of situations. So, but you know, it's this is a problem, and that's why you have to have good controls in place,
sure,
to make sure that something like this doesn't occur. That you have a list of approved vendors to mm-hmm. go to that have been checked out by an independent third party. So you don't just have somebody in charge of a grant saying, oh, well, let's take this one, and it's a completely phony company. You know?
Well, one of the topics we talked about tonight was social engineering. And so we talked
about in your class.
Yeah, we talked about that. And because one of the things that I love to do the first day is talk about lying. And talking about how people manipulate each other. We manipulate each other. And so I always show one of my favorite TED Talks, other than my own, uh-huh. is How to Spot a Liar by Pamela Meyer. I don't know if you've ever seen this TED Talk. It's phenomenal. First of all, she talks about how frequently people lie. But then she talks about how to spot a liar. And one of the things she says is rubbing your nose like you just did.
I know. That's why I did it.
But we were just talking about social engineering. And so there's just some facts about it that I think is interesting, because what came across my email today is there's this huge phishing scheme going on at DePaul right now.
Wow.
And so every day we get these emails from someone saying, I'm in a meeting. Can you help me? Or are you available? Have you gotten that yet?
My wife did.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago. We're driving together commuting and she got that email.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a big one.
And so when you think about phishing schemes, you know, 77% of phishing schemes are all socially based attacks. 77%. That's huge,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And by the way, this is phishing with a PH.
Phishing with the PH. And have you gotten links, the phishing or the text messages with links in it? Have you ever clicked on one?
Oh, no. I'm too smart for that.
But don't you want to click on it?
Especially the ones that say, boy, I've seen this video, and I think that's you, isn't it?
I got that. Yeah. What is that? I keep getting that over and over again, and I'm not crazy enough to click on it, but I have to tell you, I'm tempted. I'm tempted to click on it.
Well, in your case, it might be a video.
But it says, hey, aren't you in this video? I want it to stop. I just don't know how to stop it, but I want it to.
Control yourself. But anyway, that has become a huge, huge problem.
We are back. Kelly Richmond Pope.
And Bill Cressy.
With True Crime here tonight on WGN Radio 720.
You know, Kelly, you wonder, is there redemption in this world? And I just want to point out the Cleveland Browns, who in Monday Night Football, according to Vic Vaughn's report, beat the New York Jets 23-3. Last week, they lost 13-43. So they went from being losing by 30 points to winning by 20. See, redemption is possible in this world. So, okay, let's talk about fraud now.
Let's see.
We were talking about the phishing scam that so many people, I'm getting this call from people. As I said, my wife and I were driving to work, and she was driving, and I pick up, you know, the phone. Here's a text supposedly from her boss saying he's in a meeting right now at like 7 a.m. He can't, you know, talk, but I need you to do me a big favor. Okay, text back, and it's like, that's a funny number or whatever. And it's like, I need you to stop at a store and buy $500 of Google Plus.
Let me tell you, that happened to two of my colleagues at DePaul, and I bet Erin, because she's married to Professor Fraud, didn't fall victim to it.
No, of course not.
But because my colleagues are on the other hall, not near my office.
Okay. Yeah. Were these accounting professors?
They were, but they were victimized. They were victimized. So get what they did. So you're right. Yeah. He sent those instructions. I'm in a meeting. Can you help me out? And one colleague said, oh, sure. Of course I can. Great. Then the email turned into a text message. Mm. So then it was a text conversation from a number, an odd number. Now, that should have been your first red flag that it wasn't from the number. But get this. One colleague didn't have the cell phone number stored in his phone of the other colleague. Mm. So when the text came, he didn't know that it wasn't from his number. But it wasn't from a 312-708-608. 773. It wasn't from any of the area codes.
Right.
So it was from some crazy looking area code. So should have still been a red flag. So the instructions said, go buy like 10 iTunes cards.
Right.
And apparently you can't buy 10. You have to go not from the same location. You have to go to different locations. So the colleague writes back and says, well, I only could get 5. I'll have to go to another location to get the additional ones. So can you give me an hour? So the fraudster is probably like, yeah, bingo, I found another sucker today. But so my colleagues, having good hearts and trusting people, went and bought the additional cards.
Mm.
And so then they get a message saying, okay, now that you have the cards in hand, scratch off the back number.
Yeah.
Similar to our secret shopper scam.
Right.
So he did.
Oh. Yeah.
So that put $1,000 in the hands of the fraudsters.
Yeah.
They got away with it.
And they ran out and they spent it immediately. So you can't. So Apple, or in the case with my wife, Google, Google Plus gift cards. But again, the money's gone. As I say, my wife had Professor Fraud sitting right there next to her. And I was like, this is a scam. Don't do this.
Now, have you ever had any one of those scams where someone takes over your account? Have you ever had those happen or heard of that happen?
I've heard it happening. And in fact, we were talking before.
Account takeover.
Account takeovers.
ATO.
Yeah. And kind of related to that is ransomware.
Yeah.
Which is getting to be really scary because you've got government agencies, hospitals falling victim of this. And we mentioned before the messages you get, is this you in this video? Some of those I've been told, if you go to it and follow the instructions and download, it downloads, you know, various malware onto your computer and could even include ransomware, where you get a message saying, hey, we've just taken over all of your files and we will destroy them unless you send me so many thousands of dollars via Bitcoin to, you know, this secret, you know, account in the dark web.
So when you get this text message, it's called Smishers?
Smishers.
Smishers. So there's phishing. Mm-hmm.
Vishing.
Smishers. Mm-hmm. Now get this.
Smishing.
60% of people get links, okay, of these text links. So smishing. Mm-hmm. Of the 60%, 14% will reply to the text. 14%.
Yeah.
26% will call the number. Like, who is doing this? Like, why are you calling the number of a foreign number that you don't know? But anyhow.
Yeah.
It's a problem.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, it costs the perpetrators practically nothing to perpetrate this fraud.
Nothing.
So, if only, you know, 0.5% out of tens of thousands of messages get responded to, it's still profitable.
Yeah. The average loss for a targeted business, $42,546 per account.
Yeah.
That can add up.
Yeah.
That's a serious problem.
Yeah.
So, okay, tell us all. You've never clicked on a link?
Well, I've clicked on links if I knew it was safe and it came from a known party.
But did you check the email to make sure there wasn't an extra dot? Did you make sure it was from me?
Yes.
And it wasn't like...
Especially if it's from you, Kelly. I mean, and some of the people you hang with, I better check those email addresses. Look for that S after HTTP. And all those things you have to look for.
Okay, so what's out? What else? What other good scams did we see this week?
Oh, let's see. Well, here's one. It's our back to school program, back to school show. And this was one, again, a phishing scam that struck a Canadian university, and they lost about $10 million.
$10 million.
So,
what university is this?
This would be McEwen University in Edmonton, Alberta. Now, this was a while
back. I've been to Edmonton.
Yes,
I was there last year.
Well, okay, I think we've got a suspect here. Here I come, my friends in the RCMP. By the way, I've known RCMP folks, they are the best. I mean, they're Canadians. They're very friendly, you know, right? And that's probably part of the problem here, because here you had the school's accounting department, not the academic accounting department, the folks that pay the bills.
The real people, the real
accounts. The real folks, yeah, that pay the bills. Well, they received a fake email that said that one of the school's major vendors was changing its bank information, its banking information.
Oh, come on, not this.
Yep.
Come on, accountant group, you fell for this one?
Yeah, so they thought, they changed their banking, And, okay, I'm sorry to the Canadian listeners for doing that bad Canadian accent. But
just like bad dancing.
Yeah, probably worse, but they got this, you know, saying, we're this big vendor of yours, and there's a couple of big vendors that every university uses, and from now on, pay our bills, send the direct, the electronic funds transfer to this bank account. And they did. And so three staffers made payments in three separate installments.
All they had to do, though, was a two-part authentication. That's it.
Yes, but they didn't.
Pick up the phone and confirm, is this really happening?
Yes. Well, they sent $11.8 million.
Oh, come on.
Which is about $9.5 million. And by the time it was, you know how it was discovered, the actual vendor who
didn't get paid
and said, hey, where's our money? I said, well, we sent it to you. And I'm like, no, you didn't. You know, we sent it to your new bank.
What new bank?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And they finally, the RCMP got in and they tracked the payments.
Where did they track it to?
It first went to Montreal and then to Hong Kong.
Oh.
And then they kind of lost track.
So they lost it. It's gone.
It's gone. Yeah. Yeah. Hong Kong seems to be, at least at that time, with what's going on over there now, who knows. One of the big places for phony money and money laundering stuff, the Seychelles Islands.
Oh.
Sounds
like a nice place to visit.
It is.
It's probably lots of money there, too.
Gorgeous beaches right off.
Have you been?
No, it's either yes or no. No, but back in my single days, I dated a gal from there.
Oh,
but,
do tell. Do tell. Don't
no,
tell.
No, no,
don't
no,
tell.
No, no,
don't
no, tell. No. Gorgeous beaches, Indian Ocean off the coast of Africa.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back to this story with you.
Well, not the girlfriend part,
okay.
Please.
You are listening to Kelly Pope and Bill Cressy talking true crime on WGN Radio 720. Okay.
I'm trying to control myself.
I think you should. Thank you so much. This is Kelly Pope and
Professor Fraud Bill Cressy, who's restraining himself from breakdancing right now.
Okay. It is 12:49, so we probably don't want to see you breakdancing, really.
Well, I'd be below the counter, so you wouldn't see it anyhow.
So we are talking true crime, and this evening was our back-to-school theme, and we talked, had some really interesting guests, and we opened our time together talking about the college admission scandal, and we were talking about Felicity Huffman and her 14 days in prison, she's about to serve her 14 days. I wonder what it'd be like for her. I mean, she'll probably have her own special cell, and she'll probably have a nice little place to sleep, probably. But anyhow, I digress.
It's a federal, it'll be a federal lockup. She probably qualifies for one of the camps, or as they call them, club feds. And,
yeah, so it won't be that bad for her. She'll probably lose a little bit of weight. The food probably won't be great, but it'll be over before she knows it. But you sent a very interesting article that I think we should talk about, debate about, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on it. And that is looking at Canada. And the title was, Why Canadian schools?
Yeah, it's the title. It's from the Huffington Post, and it's "This is why Canadian universities don't have college admissions scandals."
And you know, it was interesting because it really ties back to Kelly Williams Bowler's comment about how she was always advocating for equity in education. And what Canada does or has is they don't have a lot of variability among the universities.
Right.
So you don't see like a super elite school and a super lower tiered school. All of them are pretty equivalent. And so they profiled families, wealthier families in Canada, saying it wasn't something of interest because the school down the street is just as fine as a school up the street.
Yeah. I'd rather have my kid close by. You know, they could live at home for 3 years, and their senior year they can live on campus. You know, and you know it's all about just getting the degree. And there's a funny quote in here. It says, you know, one woman named Grace said her kid wanted to go to medical school, and she didn't care where because it's not as if patients care.
But then I'll tell you this. My husband cares. Now, that was a quote in that article that my husband will look up where a person went to school, where they did their residency. I mean, he will research a person. So I don't know if that's totally true using my sample of one being my husband.
Well, okay. But I it's funny. It reminded me of a quote by Coach Lou Holtz, formerly head coach at Notre Dame, who said, you know, when you're head coach at Notre Dame, you have to, you know, win all the games, win your bowl game, win the national championship every year. Yet, you know, if you go to medical school and graduate at the bottom of the class, they still call you doctor, you know? So
yeah, it's almost like the CPA exam. Doesn't matter if you got a 75 or a 95, you still pass the exam.
You got it.
You're still a CPA.
Yeah, my 75 hung in there.
But, you know, they said something that, you know, this author was saying that all parents look at schools pretty equivalent. And I don't know that that is, I don't know. I mean, I don't live in Canada, but I think about the schools that I know of in Canada. Do you look at University of Toronto and McGill as equivalent schools?
Yeah.
You do?
McGill and Toronto, I think, are I think most people would say, are the two best schools.
But they don't say best. They think everything is more, you know, all on the same sort of feeling.
That's what the article says. Having spent time, you know, I spent a week at U Toronto, and I spent some time in Montreal, and talking to his professors. McGill is in Montreal, but they also have the University of Montreal and a couple other schools there. And quietly amongst themselves, they acknowledge, yeah, McGill's the best.
Yeah, but they don't have scandals. They don't. And that's something else they said was, you aren't going to get into these top schools based on donor, how much money you donate, or if you play a sport. It's based. It's on merit. It's on your grades.
And it's all based on your high school GPA. That they don't even use the standardized tests up there.
So maybe we're doing something wrong.
Maybe we should all become Canadians.
Oh, and don't say that to my husband.
And then we have to apologize to everyone.
Yeah. So, but maybe they do have admission scandals and they just don't know it. Maybe the whistleblower hasn't spoken yet.
No, and knowing a lot of Canadians, no, they're just too nice up there. I don't think they do that, you know. But I think they've got something. Most of theirs, yeah, you've got McGill and the University of Toronto, and they're huge. You know,
say huge again.
Huge. They're huge. I think University of Toronto's got like 71,000 students.
Oh, wow.
I think this goes back to, I think when the other Trudeau was prime minister, he consolidated a bunch of other schools into this one big University of Toronto. And so it's really the big, you know, the big gorilla on the block. It's looked at this fine school, and you just, if your grade point average in high school is good enough, you're in. That's it. You know, there isn't the kind of crazy competition where you've got, and even as I say, people acknowledge McGill and Toronto are the best. I mean, those are in top schools worldwide, and yet, you know, the next, if you want to say the second tier schools, are not that far off, you know. It's not this craziness that we have here where, you know, I've got to get my kid into Harvard or Yale and,
And let's add to that. My kid's not qualified to go to Harvard or Yale, but I have to get them in there anyway.
I've got to get them in there anyway.
And then they have to survive it. So they have to, I don't even understand how that works because you still have to compete once you're there.
Yeah, which makes me then wonder about the professors there.
And who's all in on the system?
Yeah, and, you know, are the professors thinking, well, this is so-and-so's kid, and he just, you know, paid for a new building. I better give him a passing grade. Heck, I better give him an A.
But can you live your whole college career that way?
It's 4 years, yeah.
But
can you live your whole career, your life that way?
But then that's what goes back to the responsibility and the accountability of the kid. Because at some point, you have to own it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like we tell students all the time, you're really not cheating anyone but yourself.
We say that,
but
it doesn't even sound good anymore.
I know, but it is true. It is true.
You know, they don't care about that anymore.
No, they just want to get the grade and move on.
Get the grade, get the job, get their life started, because it's just... it doesn't work anymore.
But then they fail at the job.
They fail at the job. Or they network well enough to make the job work.
That's true, too. So, boy, we're really getting, you know, getting really cynical at the end of this program today.
I know, but, you know, I had a tough class today.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just the way we start the class is I give them a pre-class assignment. And so they have to go out and they have to survey 10 people on these ethical dilemmas.
Yeah.
And so I have 40 students and each of them talk to 10 people. So we have a sample size of 400. And after today, I was wiped out on the way the world rationalizes potential ethical dilemmas.
Yeah.
And so that answers the question of why there is so much fraud in the world.
Well, which is why I think it's important that you and I in our classes and our colleagues should always, you know, in a basic accounting class, have them think about these ethical issues. Because, again, you've got that small little voice in the back of your head that knows right from wrong. listen to it and try to drown out the noise.
Also, you have that voice that's saying you could probably get away with it and not get caught.
Well,
you have these voices in your head. So I'm telling you, it's...
Well, my voice in my head is telling me it's almost time for us to go.
Yeah, almost. Well, it's been fun tonight. It's been on our back to school special. Who knows what's going to happen this week in fraud?
Oh, well, there's always something, because that's, as the two of us know, it's such a fun field to study, because the bad guys are always coming up with new and exciting ways to separate us from our money.
And there's a lot of good guys that turn to bad. Because he can.
True. But then, you know, there's redemption. Cleveland Browns have showed us that tonight.
Oh, my God. I didn't even know there was a game. Who are the Cleveland Browns again? I'm joking. I'm joking.
Okay.
So that should
probably start wrapping it up for tonight. Another fun-filled episode of True Crime
with us.
With Kelly and Bill.